Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we are archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also link to our guests on the schedules page up until the date of broadcast, and then after that, the file, the audio file, is available on the radio show's page along with the link to our guests' website so that you can check them out and get all the information that you need. Kind of like the website for desert.jewel.org or lynn-murphy.com. And we'll be giving you that out again in just a little bit. I want to welcome Lynn Murphy. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me today.
We're going to get into the subject I think is very important for folks these days, especially into the new year, living hope, steps to leaving suffering behind. Born and raised a Catholic, that's going to be hard for me to do, Lynn, because that was a focal point, suffering. You must suffer.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's not the only religion that requires suffering, but it's there.
Mm-hmm.
You also have as I mentioned in the website, you also have an institute called the Desert Jewel Institute, Living a Spiritual Life of Purpose and Meaning. I'd like to talk about that a little bit later on in the program as well.
Sure.
You have a variety of classes for beginners and intermediate meditation. Basically all classes, you have them personalized to meet the needs of the individuals and groups that are participating. So, And you are located in, oh my gosh, my hometown of Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm.
Born and raised there, left in 2006. I've only been back once, maybe twice in 10 years, but that's okay. This whole aspect of suffering, I'm almost reticent to even ask you to define it, because I think it's pretty relevant. It's pretty prevalent that everybody seems to be suffering, whether it be from financial issues or relationship issues, or even just the news of the day issues. Everybody's just all worked up, and I think there's a certain amount element of suffering in that, when we watch the stories that pop up from day to day, nationally and internationally, even locally, in our respective areas. And yet I've heard it said, Lynn, and I'll have you correct me if I'm wrong, that we need suffering because that's what builds character.
Sure, we can appreciate it for that. It does, and I think out of the suffering that occurred in my early part of my life, it made me a compassionate person. It made me empathetic towards other people. And I believe that one of the reasons I studied Buddhism is that it's all about suffering. If you're going to be alive, you're going to be suffering. And yet, I couldn't just live with that. You know, I have a low tolerance for misery. So, you know, what do you do? What do you do? And my whole life is about getting out of that state and staying out of that state and then sharing it with others.
Well, it seems to me that, and I look back sort of on my heritage as well as Irish, that part of just being an Irish person is, you know, you suffer, you complain, you moan and groan. Amidst the moments, the instances of joy and happiness, you know, and that seems to be the case. But there's also a place where, and we've talked about this on other programs, where if you can get into, shall we call it the zone, where you're not just living on purpose, but what you're doing. There's almost like no time, there's no space. You're just doing whatever it is that, you're doing there. I've had that happen with, whether it be interviews where I thought we just started and it's like, it's already an hour? Really? Or, you know, sports. You hear the phrase where a guy, in basketball, can't miss a shot. Hits everything. Every ball he puts up goes in the hoop. And so forth. There's no suffering going on there, but then when they get out of that realm, it's like everything seems to fall apart.
I really appreciated studying Abraham Maslow's research about type, what he called type B experiences. But that is what you're talking about, that zone where when you're engaged in a conversation, that time is suspended and hours pass. And all you're aware of is the joy of the moment. And I think that there are ways that we can create them, being in nature, being with art. And but the other place that I can always create that is in meditation. In meditation, all the needs and wants and worries and wonders fall away. And there's really a deep peace to have there. And there's like an emptiness, a spaciousness. And in there, there's no seeking. And I think that's like how I can do that on purpose.
So if there is a certain element of character building in this process of pain and suffering, if we were to alleviate it, how would we then sort of, in this kind of a side note, I suppose, how would we then build that character that is, you know, that is spoken of in that catchphrase?
I don't know. You know, I look at all the religions that we have, and so it seems like every one of them has a list of precepts on how to live. You know, there's what would Jesus do, and we know all the ways that Christians are taught how to behave. Buddhists have the same thing. Almost all religions have that. So that could be a guide. But then there's also that inner voice that guides us, that that seeking for truth, that seeking for something to relieve the suffering, the seeking for something greater than ourselves, seeking for peace and comfort. And I think that's a good way to be guided. And then you have to watch out for things like, because you can get temporary solace from alcohol, food, sex, shopping, any of those things, but those are really temporary. And so I think that our own inner selves can be our own guide, too.
Well, and you come from a place in your early years of, some would consider, great suffering. You were a little over 2 years old, and you virtually, you know, you lost virtually your entire family.
Yes.
And, I mean, I think about my folks who are in their 80s, and they're still going strong, and I know one day I'm going to get that phone call.
Right.
And I you know, and we all think, oh, I'm going to prepare myself ahead of time. I can intellectualize it any way I want. You can't prepare for those kinds of things. And even at the age of two, you had to know certainly what was transpiring.
You know, I don't remember the house fire. And I do remember being in the hospital afterwards and going, where'd everybody go? Where's my family? How come they're not visiting? What's going on? And a lot of confusion. I think I talk about that in my book, that's one of the things that showed up a lot is what happened, what's going on, and now what's going on with all these adults around me, because they've changed. My grandmother, my mother, for instance. So I think that's suffering from, you know, really pure, real suffering with the burdens on my body and the losses in my life. And yet, you know, the mind at the same time keeps asking questions. What's going on? Where is everybody? How do I deal with this? How do I get my needs met? And I think that's something I talk a lot about in the book, is where do we find love? Where do we find solace? And then I give those answers, at least the ones that I found, and encourage people to go after it, because, as you mentioned earlier, that misery that can really be around the holidays for some people, or it can be every night after driving home in traffic, struggling through a day of work, and then sitting down and watching the news, it's really healthy for us to step out of that. You know, an aside that I want to mention is some people are very, very sensitive. sensitive because they're intuitive, and they feel other people's pain. They're aware of what's going on with other people that goes unspoken, and they take that in, and that makes them suffer too.
Mm.
That's something I like to do with my clients that have that sensitivity, is to heighten their awareness of it so that they can deal with it better. So I think there's 101 ways out of suffering. And my book talks about the ones I used. And then I teach a workshop now, 7 Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind, where we experience a lot of the different techniques that I've used that are really beneficial. And some are scientifically based and some aren't. And, of course, we do meditations and guided meditations. And I just ran the pilot of that, and people loved it. And I put information about that on the website.
You also, I think this is really kind of cool in a way, you also make reference to a movie list for that people can watch as far as, I guess, what, inspiring them, encouraging them, giving them some guidance, if you will?
Yes, and expanding our perspective. Because just think about the first Star Wars series that came out.
Oh, yeah.
And how people, they talked about the Force, use the Force. And then people laughingly would refer to that. But isn't that a great way, especially for people who don't want to talk about God, to talk about that energy that is in the world, that is in the universe, that we can become aware of and use to guide us. So that's one example. Another one was What Dreams May Come. It was a Robin Williams film way back.
Yes, yes.
And the all about a lot about death, but about what occurs on the other side and some of the traps to avoid. But, boy, what a great depiction. And so things like that opened my mind, expanded my mind, you know, to maybe something I'd read about but then made it a little more concrete. And then you can share that with another human being, and that expands you too.
Hmm. So you had this experience that you don't have a lot of recollection over, but at the same time, there was certainly a lot of effect to your life after the fact, even beyond the hospital, that you had to deal with as a child and even growing up, that I'm sure challenged you in a great way.
Well, I developed PTSD. Would be, you know, one of the factors. But besides surviving the fire, and I was the only survivor. My father died. My sisters died. My mother wasn't home right then. So, but then I want to go to. That's funny. I lost my train of thought.
As far as the challenges that you faced following this event, I mean, you and your mother were still alive, but now you were facing the world and the future.
Right.
Just the two of you.
Right, just the two of us. And her coping mechanism became alcohol, and that numbed the pain for her, and she lived that way until she died when she was 49. For me, as a child, that left me more bewildered, like, where are you? How come you're not here for me? Fortunately, I had a grandmother who was my dad's mother, who was really there for me and was really strong and solid. And she would be, when you look at resilience research, they talk about the significant people in your life that make a difference, why some children follow in the steps of dysfunction and some don't, why some are quite successful, no matter what family and challenges they came out of. And it can be, you know, a grandparent, it can be a coach, a minister, a teacher. It's pretty amazing. So my grandmother was that person for me. So I think, though, an important trait that I had that made a difference was not being willing to accept the dysfunction, to see, and I think a lot of kids do this, they see what's going on in their family and go, really? Like, you taught me better than that, and then why are you living that way? So to keep questioning, I think that's a wonderful attribute. And then believing that it can be better. So with the PTSD and depression also that resulted from, because there was a fire, but then, you know, mom remarried and that stepfather died in a logging accident. Mom remarried and that man, had a serious alcohol problem and physically abused my mom. And so that household was violent and crazy, and I moved out when I was 17. That kind of life usually perpetuates itself. It's hard to grow up in that and not, well, you know, it can take you either of two ways. You can either come out of that and go, no way, I'm not living like that ever again. Or you can not think about it a lot and just end up in that same predicament in your own life later on.
Yeah. And you know, I take a look at my life and I hear these stories of different people who have gone through some incredible things. And I look at my life going, it's been kind of easy in a way. I mean, I haven't had those kinds of devastations, not even close. I'm certainly experienced the loss of grandparents, a close friend back in 2003 who lived in our home for a short time and passed away. And that was hard. But it's like I look back at those events and go, those were barely bumps in the road. And yet we have folks like yourselves. And now we're hearing with especially with a lot of the extreme weather that we're having right now. And I just heard a news report as of our conversation that there were two earthquakes in California, one in northern, one in southern, that were like precursors, you know, whatever that means. But you hear about these people who are suffering because of floodings and tornadoes and extreme snow and extreme heat and on and on and on. And things are just, I mean, the tornado goes through and devastates everything. Everything's flattened. And you've lost everything, and hopefully not everyone, but still, that's a major challenge. Someone's home gets flooded out, or when we had the highway I-5 that had a mudslide, and people's cars yeah. were buried, and that kind of thing. I mean, those are I can't relate, but at the same time, I want to be there for people.
Well, isn't that the beauty of those kinds of circumstances, though? Because often it brings out the very best in us. You know, I was walking by someone in Southern California in the Los Angeles area, and she was sitting in front of a courthouse, and she was dressed really lightly, and it was cold. It was Christmas time. And I took the scarf off from around my neck and offered it to her, and she gladly wrapped it around herself. Those little moments, you know, she's suffering. I have something to offer. I have extra scarves at home. She could certainly have that one. But I think, you know, seeing others brings out the best in us. And that's the beauty of terrible things.
I know that I've heard that phrase before as well. It's these extreme situations. And I often use the phrase that these events are also great equalizers.
Yes.
Because, you know, it affects people regardless of status, economic situation, yeah. political persuasion, religious affiliation. It doesn't matter anymore. If your neighborhood was flooded out, everybody was affected, rich and poor, young and old, black and white, on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start to realize that, gee, we really are all the same.
We are all the same. All the outside stuff is just outside trappings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And having compassion for every individual, whatever color their skin, whatever their age, their socioeconomic status. Yeah, they're just people.
Yeah.
And everybody deserves and needs love. I was thinking about the events that you're talking about, the earthquakes and the floods and such. And it really helps. This is something I've done for over 25 years, that most mornings and most evenings, I wake up and do a little gratitude list in my head. And when I go to sleep, I do the same thing. And it doesn't matter if it's 3 things or 15 things, but to really feel like, oh my gosh, my bed is big and fluffy.
Mm-hmm.
I am so grateful. The heat in my house works. I am so grateful. So that we stay in that place of enjoying and appreciating what we have. Because if you have very little, a cup of coffee can be a great thing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So gratitude lists whether you do them in your head or in your journal, they're a powerful tool.
Yeah. I remember, too, after the economic downturn of 2008, because I have no clue as to what to really call it, and, you know, you can call it whatever you want, and everybody was affected a little bit differently. But my observations were on all of those people, those thousands and thousands of people who lost their jobs. Now, someone offered a critique of my statement by saying, well, that's easy for you to say because you have one. My statement was, I wonder how many of those people hated their jobs.
Oh.
And really would have rather not been doing them. But because this was the family business, or this is what our family does, you know, we're all accountants, or we're all lawyers, or we're all whatever it is. I am, and my father was, and my father's father, and my father's father's father, et cetera, et cetera. But they didn't like it at all. And it gave them the freedom for the first time to actually consider doing something else that they loved to do.
To me, that is how the good comes out of the bad.
Mm-hmm.
That for every bad thing that happens, you can find something good, not usually right away, but find something good in it. And so, yeah, for some people, that did free them from something that they never felt that they could leave, though, because who steps out and quits a job when, you know, you're counting on that income? And it takes a lot of effort to go back to school and create, you know, to open new doors for yourself. So, yeah, often life forces us to move in a new direction. And it's uncomfortable. But, you know, in hindsight, you can look back and go, aha.
Yeah. And yeah, it is something that we can certainly look back on and realize. I think the other aspect of it, too, is that I'd like to talk about a little bit more is this aspect of, for me, I can honestly say that for the better part of my life, and I'm 55, I seem to have been or seem to be in the right place at the right time. Now, some would say, well, what about the year 2000 when you were laid off four times? In 1 year, as a matter of fact, it was a very short period of time. It wasn't even the full year. Laid off four times from four different jobs. And certainly it led me to the one job that propelled me here. And I remember, too, going through the process the first two times of filing for unemployment insurance. And, of course, you have to work. You have to keep looking for work. But you don't get your first check for 2 weeks.
Yes.
And the first time I filed, I got my the second job in the second week. So no check. And then when I lost that job, I filed. And I got the third job in the second week. No check. So when I went to go, when I lost the third job, I said, forget it. Obviously, I'm going to get another job pretty quick here, so there's no point in wasting my time applying for unemployment insurance. And so then the fourth job came along, and I was off and running. But it just was very interesting how, and again, and this is all about perception. This is all about how we view things, isn't it?
Interesting how those doors kept closing, and that there was no payment at the end of the line either, and so you took a different route. That sounds significant. It sounds like part of the point within that story.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. And I also recall when I lost my job, the day after my job came to an end, we were actually all let go because the station was sold. So we weren't fired or what have you. And I get a call the next day, March 1st, telling me that my wife calls me and says, I just quit my job.
Oh, no. Oh.
Well, interestingly enough, that's what propelled us in 2006 to come to Santa Barbara.
Oh.
And here we are today. And I had no fear at that time. Now, I feel a little bit like an outsider because of my lack of suffering.
Well, in enjoy it. Life is what it is, you know, and if you don't have the karma to have created a great deal of suffering for you, enjoy that. My goodness.
Yeah.
I just happen to have a whole lot of karma to clean up in the first 25 years, and apparently of this life, and then apparently the traits that developed in me from that were really valuable to me after that, so it all needed to be. But I think it's terrific if you didn't have to do it that way.
Well, right. I'm certainly grateful in that respect. There's no question. I'm very grateful because, I sometimes take a look back at other people, and how valuable would you say others' examples? Because, you know, you hear the phrase, especially as you're growing up, from your parents in particular, that, you know, I'm trying to teach you how to avoid the mistakes that I made. When sounds like you have a story there, because they want to save you the pain.
Yeah, and parents intend to do that. I don't know how well it works because we like to learn through our own experience. You know, that even hardship is such a powerful teacher that we do a lot that way. It doesn't have to be that way, of course, but that is how a lot of people choose to learn. I think what you were also saying earlier about being in the flow, mm-hmm. you can feel that in your life when you're in the flow because this morning I was out hiking in the North Phoenix Valley and ran into a woman I used to teach school with, and we made a nice connection, and she asked about the book and so on. Those things are the signs that tell you when your life is in flow. Having your wife quit on the day that your station closed and then you both were free to move forward and take a leap. Yeah, those things tell you that you're living in the flow. It's a very good sign. And then the other thing of when we're jammed up and we can't get through, can't get doors to open and so on, also tell us it's time to, like, step back, rest, get a new perspective, find some inner peace, you know, and let it be and move out of the state of trying to force things.
I've heard the phrase, stop trying to control the process and become part of the process.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. Because if we are in our awareness, in that state of awareness that we have about, you know, it's kind of a wondering, maybe I'll do this, or that state of kind of a positive compulsion, I really need to check into this, that next thing pops up on the internet, and you're like, oh, that's the one for me. So staying in those open, receptive states, yeah, all kinds of things can come to you.
We're talking with Lynn Cockrum Murphy, and we're talking about the work that she's doing through both Desert Jewel, and that's website. The website is desertjewel.org. The book is Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk more about being and doing when we get back. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking about suffering or the lack thereof, trying to move beyond that aspect of our lives, leaving suffering behind, called Living Hope. And we're talking with the author, Lynn Cockrum Murphy, and we're talking also about, tell us a little bit about this institute, the Desert Jewel. Where is it actually physically located?
It's located in North Phoenix, and I teach classes there and both see clients one-on-one. The classes are the Access Consciousness Bars class, which originated in the Santa Barbara area, by the way. And then I teach Theta Healing, which originated through Vianna Stibble. There's Basic, Advanced, and Manifesting in Abundance, which is always a fun one. And then I teach my own classes, the 7 Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind, based on the book. And I teach meditation, my favorite.
So tell us a little bit about the process that would be helpful for us to the, like the first, you talk about steps to leaving suffering behind. What's the first step that we want to consider?
Having some sort of a spiritual practice, whether it's through a church or a synagogue or a temple, or if it's out in nature or through meditation, a spiritual practice that keeps you in awareness or brings you into awareness so that your life is connected to something greater than yourself. Then whatever bumps happen in life, you have a inner, you know, in Buddhism they call it equanimity, inner peace, that really carries you. So I would say first, any kind of a spiritual practice.
Hmm. So we don't need to get hung up in doctrine and dogma.
No.
We're talking about spirituality here. We're talking about, and what's interesting is I've had the privilege, and I considered it a privilege even then, of interviewing an atheist. And what I found was that an atheist, this particular individual, as he described himself, was just as spiritual as the next person.
Ah.
Even though he did not have a belief in a supreme being. He was still, my observation was he was a very spiritual person in the way he described the way he lived his life and the things that he did in his life.
Wonderful.
So even an atheist can have a spiritual life. So it's not about the outward trappings, shall we say?
Not at all. Some people really like the comfort they get from the rituals within their religion, and I can see that. But that's never been important to me. To me, it's the I need a go-to. So if I have that place within myself, then it doesn't matter to me when or where. I can do it right now, right here and now in my chair. Or I can walk in nature and get that peace. Or I can go to a church or a temple and listen and learn and, you know, gain through that. Or look at the gazillions of great books out there, from Deepak Chopra to Thomas Merton, you know, and we can let those guide us. I think the key is being open and interested and willing to reject, okay, I have a depression, but to reject that it will, can continue to make me miserable, because I can do one thing. That was what I was taught. Do one thing. So if it's make a phone call, if it's do some research, if it's read a book, if it's meditate, go for a walk, do one thing to move yourself into a better space.
Mm. First step. And it's taking that first step that's so important.
I think particularly with things like depression, where it's so hard to even move for some people at times. And yet, that's why I named the book Living Hope, is because I really do believe there's always hope. No matter who you are, where you are, there is always hope.
Hmm. Hope is, for some, can be elusive because they get trapped.
Exactly.
Talk about that.
Well, it's our own thinking that traps us, that I'm not enough, I can't do enough, I didn't get enough love, therefore I'm not lovable. Well, that's not true, but it is what we often believe, and all of that stuff is changeable. Those are called irrational beliefs, and we picked them up for good reason, but they don't serve us anymore, and we can remove them. Theta healing is really good at identifying them and removing them. So it's our own thinking that spins us around in circles or causes us, the women who marry an abusive man and then get out of that and then marry an abusive man and then get out of that and then marry an abusive man, that's changeable, but it takes therapy or it takes healing work. It takes a lot of effort, and it's so worth it because then you get a quality life.
Hmm.
But that's why there's a gazillion tools out there for us. There are recovery programs. There are, you know, all the different religions. There's even just simple things like journaling or the power of autobiography. So I so very much encourage people, and that's what the book is really about, is no matter how bad it's ever been, you can take a step towards making it a little better for yourself. Peace is available. Suffering is a state that can actually push us towards peace because it's a motivator.
Hmm. Well, it sounds to me like these tools are extremely valuable, especially to someone who feels as though there's not much hope in their lives. I mean, they've been hit by, they feel a little bit like Job, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everything seems to have been taken away from them in whatever manner that might have been.
Mm-hmm.
And now they just kind of want to curl up in a corner and disappear. What's the point of going on?
And that's okay temporarily. You know, I was in Los Angeles around Christmas, and there was a couple of house fires. And, some people died in house fires at Christmas, and that always gets your attention on the news. But even those people, all the suffering that they must be enduring, but that they can, when they're ready, say, okay, what can I do for myself now? Where do I get help? Who do I look to? Who do I ask? And for me, that's why that meditation is good, because that's an inside, quiet, alone thing that you don't have to have money, you don't have to have anyone else. So that's one resource, but there's so many more, and it's a matter of making a call or reaching out or asking. Have you ever noticed that about people, that they don't tend to want to ask for help?
Hmm. You hear the phrase that, I don't want your charity.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, or that American belief of I must pull myself up by my own bootstraps. And, you know, it's really nice to be independent and strong. Those are great attributes. At the same time, it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you on that. I have to say that I guess I've been fortunate in that I've asked for help from time to time, and I've never felt that kind of pride that would prevent me from saying, "Hey, I'm in distress over here. Can someone help?" Now, does it always come? Sometimes it does, but there's another aspect of it too, is that the way in which you expect it to come may not be the way that it comes.
True. Really true. In fact, we're supposed to, I've heard it recommended, to ask, to take the steps and to let go of the expectation of exactly how it's supposed to look. Because if I want, let's say I want to earn an extra certain amount of money in the next 6 weeks, well, it could come as a gift, it could come through work, or it can come through a car accident, an insurance. So, you know, you just be open and also do the good karma work so that it comes from the nicer sources rather than something rough.
Oh, yeah, very much so. But that's one of the things, too, and especially when we talk about abundance and prosperity on this program, you know, everybody thinks that, okay, it's going to come in cash, you know, or I'm going to win the lottery, you know, and that type of thing. And
really good point. Yeah, it's not that limited. It could be the simple ability to cut back on some things while more money also comes in, and therefore it's like double the amount. Yeah, it's being very open. Just because we think linearly, I can't say it, we think in terms of things being linear, the world is not. The world is not linear at all. It's only our minds that like to be that way. So, yeah, be open. Who knows what you'll get?
This is, I think, a very valuable program for folks, and I encourage you to check out Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. This is my guest is Lynn Cockrum Murphy, and we're talking about all these different aspects. How might somebody get involved with the Desert Jewel Institute, and what might they experience? What kind of, and also, I'm kind of asking a lot of questions all at once, but maybe just you can give us a really in-depth discussion on this as to what someone can expect.
So my website, desertjewel.org, has a contact page on it, so you can contact me. I'm also on Facebook, Lynn Cockrum Murphy, or the website Desert Jewel is connected through Facebook, too. If someone were to take a class, what they would get is a supportive, kind environment in which they get to experience their spiritual growth, however their own spirituality manifests itself. Then have to be according to my rules. Then, and experiencing different things, like the Seven Steps Workshop has things from doing the Myers-Briggs inventory and discussing the results, or it has guided meditations and journaling about one's experience. It has sharing and conversation amongst the students. If it's a theta healing class, then they learn the power of prayer connected with a theta brainwave state. And the theta state, originally when I taught meditation, I only taught meditation to the more basic states. Theta is higher. It's more advanced. It's like the long-term monks, like monks who've meditated their whole lives, it's what they achieve. So I teach my students how to do that, and then to make connection with Source from that place, from the theta state, and to pray from that place. And that's where miracles happen. We also identify irrational beliefs and remove them, and do downloads for positives in their place, so that possibly a person who's never known unconditional love, it creates the possibility for that in their life. So I teach those classes, and then I also work one-on-one with people using the multiple services that I have. I'm also a licensed substance abuse counselor, so I use those skills, too, to create a comfortable, safe place for people to come and talk about whatever they need to change in their lives. So I've seen people come in and, you know, they're unhappy about their job, and the next time I talk to them after that theta healing session, they've quit that business and moved on. And I didn't expect that to happen. I didn't suggest that. But because the theta healing process frees them up, that the blocks and limitations that were there get removed, and their life becomes more expansive. I also do access consciousness, the bars portion. That is on the internet. You can research that. You can research theta healing. The seven steps to leaving suffering behind is just my own creation and available through my website. There's another website that's just for the book, and that's lynncockrum-murphy.com, and that's just about me and the book. So, and it also has the opportunity to order the book. It's through Amazon. You can get the soft cover, or you can get it on Kindle for much less.
Well, and that's the other amazing thing, too, with our technology today. It gives us the opportunity not just to be connected and to communicate from long distances, but also to have access to information that can really help. And, for example, many of my interviews, I use Skype. And yeah. I actually interviewed a woman all the way in India.
Wow.
And we worked out all the time differences and everything. And so we were able to communicate from that far off without having to use, you know, long distance phones and trying to figure out how many numbers in the phone number, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 and all of those kinds of things to be able to disseminate this kind of information to people. And I think that these tools are so valuable that people really need to be checking this stuff out, because I think that a lot of folks, you know, they can relate to maybe your experiences more than mine, But by the same token, regardless, sometimes even the minor experiences, we blow up in our minds. Correct me if I'm wrong in my perception here, but the bad things in our lives seem to grow larger after the sun's gone down.
I think that's really true. It's really true. The light of day helps us gain a little perspective. And we have to watch out for rumination. That is, you know, going over the same event over and over and over. Very unhealthy, because we don't usually get anywhere positive from that. Much, much better thing to journal it out, to call someone and talk to someone about it, to get it out of our heads, because otherwise we tend to go in circles with it, and it kind of owns us.
Hmm. I noticed that when I used to be extremely frustrated, anxious, even fearful about financial matters, It was those night times when it became the worst, that I couldn't seem to find my way up and out of that hole. And as you say, once the sun came up, it was like I couldn't wait to start to see the twilight, you know, because I knew, the sun is coming and it'll shed some light on the reality of what is and not the imagination of what isn't.
Well, and I think that there's, you know, we can step out and step into our power during the daytime, because you can make phone calls, you could make appointments, you can connect with people.
Yeah.
Where at night we tend to isolate. It's not a good time to call someone at 10 o'clock at night. And things just go around in circles in our heads. I think that that would be a great time for study, for journaling, and for meditation, because all of those things can propel us forward. Or, you know, taping and recording some of those old films, but also something like Oprah's Super Soul Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very encouraging and uplifting.
Yeah. Extraordinary stuff, and certainly encourage people to, again, check out this information and go to the website. Again, that website is DesertJewel.com for the Desert Jewel .org, I believe. Beg your pardon, .org. Desert Jewel Institute is the name. And basically, it's living a spiritual life of purpose and meaning, and you can get information and touch base with Lynn and maybe get back on the road to where it is that you want to be. In terms of this process of leaving suffering behind, have you had people come to you who maybe were on their path? They felt like I was living on purpose, and then all of a sudden, whammo, I got hit, and I can't seem to get back on track. Or is it more people who they haven't quite gotten there yet, and this is what's keeping them from finding their purpose in life?
You know, sometimes they hear something that I say or something about me, and they come because they think that they might get some of what they need, whatever their next step is, or freedom from something so that they can move forward. People are usually seeking change or personal growth. Those are some of the main reasons. They feel that sense of hope. They know some of my story, and that, you know, it's kind of that, well, if she could do it, maybe I can do it kind of thing. And I think also people who are open to being guided to not do it alone, and to, you know, to be encouraged to find a path for themselves. Because you can always go join Yogananda's Self-Realization Institute.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you want something more uniquely yours, and someone just to help you through this 6 months kind of thing, or this month. And I think that that's why a lot of people are guided to me, towards me. And often when they want change, when they're not sure about their marriage, when they want a different job, when they're banging their head against the wall when it comes to a particular relationship, even a family relationship, and they want assistance in getting free of all that.
Hmm. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Lynn Cockrum Murphy, talking about the work that she's doing through the Institute, which is the Desert Jewel Institute and desertjewel.org. The book that we're talking about in particular is Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. And I wanted to talk about this aspect that you have a section here in the book, in particular, chapter 21, Being, and this wonderful little diagram showing two circles, and they're joined in the center, being, doing, and then this where they're joined together, being while doing. And it brings to mind that wonderful old phrase that we've heard, I don't know how many times, that we are human beings having a spiritual experience, and human being, we're not a human doing. Talk to us a little bit about that, but also in relation to that wonderful little diagram of yours.
I put that in there. I've used that with several workshops that I've presented for groups of people, and it represents how most of us do the doing pretty well. You know, we work, we raise our families, we provide, we decorate our homes, et cetera. We can do. But we want more of that being, because there's that deep satisfaction that comes in just being. There's a gap that happens, though, because we see the being as meditating, contemplative time, silence. Yoga might provide it, Qigong, Tai Chi. In those kinds of things. So where is the place that we can maybe have both? And the yoga, Qigong, Tai Chi fall more in that middle part where the two circles intersect, where you can have the state of being while doing. That's what's wonderful about those forms of exercise. But some people get that state of being while gardening. Some people get it while hiking. I bet some people get it while sailing. So if we can't sit and be in the being state all the time, and yet I think that level of awareness is really the key to one's spiritual advancement, is to be in the state of being. But what if we look for the things that are the state combined of being and doing? I think some people achieve it also through dancing. Some of the times that I've done workshops, people have presented to me like, well, what about through dancing? Because, and I'm not talking about nightclub dancing, that they feel that they've achieved it at those times. Another person, it might be through writing. So whatever it is for you that moves you to the being state, even if it is while doing. I can kind of get that way. A little story about me. When I was in college, I drove school bus to pay my way through college to live. So I became very, very comfortable driving. We're trained. You drive professionally. I did it for 5 years. And now driving for me is like getting in the zone. If I have something I'm contemplating and I don't have an answer, if I don't want to sit down and meditate on it, I get in my car and drive up in the hills and let it work itself out for me. That can be a being while doing state for me. So it really is kind of a creative thing that people can find their own. Chanting would do it. Singing could probably do it. Look at the whirling dervishes. They twirled while they were in that ecstatic state of being with God. So that's what that's all about. And I give some guidance in the book about figure out what you do. Of course, that list is usually pretty long. Figure out the states of being that you currently do and like, and then what could you find in the middle? And I give examples in the book, too. So usually I encourage people to walk away with that, which is heightened awareness, and then one or two things that you might want to add in. Instead of always doing training yourself at the gym, maybe it's time for a yoga class or a Tai Chi class outdoors.
What about the aspect of intuition in all of this?
I think that pretty much everybody has intuition. Some people are really amazing with their intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's something that's not encouraged in our culture, though, that whatever intuition I had as a child was never encouraged or acknowledged. So I would say you can look for ways to encourage it, to trust those hunches. Wow, hunches are powerful and fun. You know, it, when I was a teenager, we used to just do it with figuring out who was calling before you picked up the phone, when the phone rang.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many ways to do it. But it shows us that we are not beings limited to these bodies. We're something much more infinite than that. And our intuition is, I guess, one of the ways that that manifests ourselves, or itself.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of anything that you want to know, if you sit and get silent, particularly if you can go up to the theta state, changing your brain waves, then you can know almost anything.
So where are you today with suffering?
It only comes up on occasion, and it's usually about really human stuff, sometimes about relationships, but I don't stay in suffering at all. I have a low tolerance, and I have a lot of tools. So if Christmas time and family created a resentment, I practice healthy boundaries. I use theta healing to pull the resentment, and I allow my awareness to expand and remind myself to pray for that person, to pray for their health, their happiness, their prosperity, to pray for my love, compassion, and understanding for that person and situation. So I use all those tools, and suffering can come up, but it doesn't stay. I really have learned, and I talk a lot about those tools in the book, of how to transcend all that. We're in the physical world, so stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
Reading about the forest fire that was just south of you at
yes.
Christmas?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, I was concerned about the animals in the area, the firefighters, or like that one that you talked about where there was the mudslide and people driving down I-5 were trapped. Those kinds of moments of suffering come up. It really helps, I think, being a meditator or having a tool so that you can have your own inner peace, observe the situation, and then decide what you want to do. You know, it's there's a phrase of acting on life instead of reacting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good place to be. So I use all of that. The things in the book that I talk about are not like, you should do this. They're like, I do this. And wow, it really works. So you might want to try it.
And what's it going to hurt? What's it going to hurt if you
give
it a shot? I mean, you guess what? You might just, you know, get through the suffering much faster, learn from it. And I think that's probably the biggest key of all is the education that we can get from it if we would just open our hearts and our minds to what's happening. It's kind of like the situations that I described at the beginning of the program. And I just find it fascinating that in spite of the fact that we do everything, we're trying to do everything we can, in many cases, to avoid it. I'm not a fan of conflict.
Sure.
I don't like getting into arguments with people. I just like things to be flowing and smooth and being in the zone and doing the things that I'm here to do. But it comes up every once in a while, and maybe every once in a while what happens is I can look at it from a different perspective and say, oh, you know what? I've been here before, and I played that game that way that time, but this time, instead of rolling the dice, I'm going to spin the wheel, or I'm going to kick the ball, or you know, whatever metaphor, but I'm going to do it differently and see what happens. Because
that's a bit of wisdom you've got going there.
Because I already know the outcome if I do it the same way I've been doing it.
Right.
You know, that's the definition, as they say, of insanity. I want to thank you so much for taking out of your day so much time to share with us here on the program. It's been very, very enlightening and a lot of fun, too. And I, before I let you go, I would like to encourage our listeners to check out the work that you're doing through the Living Hope Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind. Go to her website. She has two of them. One is desertjewel.org, where you can find out about the Institute. And then, if I'm correct, it was lynncockrum-murphy.com, correct?
That's correct.
We encourage you to check it out. And also, if you find yourself somewhere outside of the Phoenix area, like, oh, I don't know, say here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue the conversation.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, and thank you so much. I appreciate your positiveness and your openness. It makes for a lovely conversation. I hope your listeners enjoyed it, too.
I'm sure they did. Before I let you go, I have three final questions for you.
Yes.
Who is Lynn Cockrum Murphy?
I'm a spiritual being living a life in a physical body. I am a product of infinity and 25 years of tumultuous living in this lifetime. And the strengths that caused me to overcome all that and have a life that's rich and full that I can share with others and assist them some.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want others to have more inner peace. Whatever their goals are, whether it's enlightenment or just understanding their own family members better. I want to be a part of that. It brings me joy watching them get what they need.
And what is your life's purpose?
I think it must be to alleviate suffering in the world. It's on my mission statement. It's just seems to have been my focus for such a long time now that I don't live in suffering anymore, even though I could, because I certainly was raised with a great deal of it.
Mm-hmm. You have all the ingredients.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of negative stuff that occurred early in my life that's mentioned in the book and explained in the book. And as we talked about perspective and viewpoint, as I allowed mine to expand so I could see those things differently, and I think that's where things like Buddhism and the law of cause and effect really was helpful. Then I have so much that I can live a purpose of supporting others.
Well, I tell you what, I would rather spend an hour talking with you than all of the other medicative methods that are out there.
I think that you sound so very much like you have a great deal of peace in your life, and you get to facilitate that and joy for others by bringing in people and for your listeners.
Well, I'm doing the best I can. And again, I thank you so much for the time that you've given us, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Okay, thank you, and a Happy New Year.
And to you, too. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.